our guests. Welcome back after Purim. Being that it's 30 days before Pesach, Sholim Midorshim Hilchas HaPesach Lamed Yavel VeHaPesach, so we're going to be learning the Haggadah now. Every morning, that means Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is Haggadah, Wednesday will still be Sfas Emes, Thursday will be Rashi, and Friday we'll be back to the Haggadah. So 4 days a week we'll learn a little Haggadah. Next week I'm away for 2 days, so we have 2 days, so Mirz Hashem, maybe three. I'll have a little bit of a break next week. Okay, so let's learn the most important part of the Haggadah that no one really has time for. Everything in the Haggadah, until the section called Sei Olamad, is all just one big stylistic introduction. The mitzvah of Pesach Night is to talk about what happened in Mitzrayim, not to talk about the five people who talked about what happened in Mitzrayim, or the four sons who like to talk about what happened in Mitzrayim, or the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah who talked about when you should talk about Yitzias Mitzrayim. The mitzvah is to actually talk about what happened in Yitzias Mitzrayim. That unfolding of the story happens in the section known as Sei Olamad, which is a medrash, which we're going to talk about the next month in Mirz Hashem. What happens is, unfortunately, but I understand, that everyone comes with their notebooks, that everyone's thrilled to talk about the Haggadah, and there's so much enthusiasm, and there's so many people around the table, and everyone says Manishtana, everyone talks about Bnei Brak, everyone talks about all the excitement, and then it's 10:30 at night, and mom is making eyes at dad, move the Seder ahead, the soup's getting cold, I worked for a month, everyone says, okay, let's quickly read through the Haggadah and get to Dayenu, so we can sing Dayenu together. And you really haven't talked about Mitzrayim because you've talked about the introduction. It's not just an introduction. The Haggadah begins. Sibur Yitzias Mitzrayim begins with welcome. Sibur Yitzias Mitzrayim begins. You can join if you'd like. Sibur Yitzias Mitzrayim begins with the section known as Sei Olamad. So that's the section that we're going to be discussing in Mirtz Hashem over the next month. Sei Olamad is a drasha. Okay, I'll talk a little bit louder. Sei Olamad is a drasha. It takes a four-pasuk synopsis of Yitzias Mitzrayim from Parshas Kisavo, and it dissects each word or each pasuk into small atomic components, and it interprets each word. This is probably the most concise and pithy synopsis of Yitzias Mitzrayim in all of Tanakh. It's four psukim. The first pasuk talks about our descent. The second pasuk talks about the slavery. The third pasuk talks about the prayer. The fourth pasuk talks about our redemption. Arami Ovid Avi, the descent to Mitzrayim, Vayered Mitzrayima, Vayareo Sanu HaMitzrim Vayanunu, the slavery, the bondage, the persecution. The third pasuk, Vanitzaka L'Hashem Vayishma Hashem Eskolenu, we daven, prayer. The fourth pasuk, Vayetzienu Hashem Elokeinu Misham, Biyad Chazaka Vizra Netuya. So it's a four pasuk synopsis, descent, slavery, prayer, redemption. And the section in the Haggadah called Sei Olamad is going to take each of these psukim and deconstruct the psukim into small little pieces, word by word, cite other psukim in Tanakh that help tease out the meaning in Kisavo. Oh, this word in Kisavo refers to the following because of a pasuk in Yechezkel, because of a pasuk in Shemos. Remember, this is from Kisavo, from a pasuk in Tehillim. So it's going to be quoting. This is how Chazal Darshan, by associating and juxtaposing psukim with other psukim. So that's what we're going to focus on the next month. And I can't promise you that you'll have time at your Seder, because everyone's Seder, as I said before, gets stuck in the beginning without really talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim. But this is really the core of the Seder to study the story. So let's start very briefly today with the first part of the first pasuk. Arami Oved Avi. What does Arami Oved Avi mean? Sure, quickly. What does Arami Oved Avi mean? So it's a double entendre. Okay, the word oved is a strange verb. It literally means wander or to destroy. In the Haggadah, it's taken a little bit non-literally. Remember the introduction of Sei Olamad. Sei Olamad ma bikesh lavan haram milasos. Let's study lavan. Paro only wanted to eliminate the males. Lavan wanted to eliminate all of our people. Shenemar arami oved avi. But the simple reading of arami oved avi, it's reflexive. Our father was a wandering Armenian. Namely, Yaakov spent time in Aram Naharaim. So we're going to take a look at each meaning. We'll take a look first at the meaning of the Haggadah, that Lavan wanted to destroy Yaakov Avinu, Arami Oved Avi, that's the way the Haggadah frames it. And then we'll spend a few moments discussing the simple reading. Why are we discussing Lavan? Where does Lavan come from? Why is Lavan so important? Why does this pasuk, again, it's not a question on the Haggadah, it's a question on the Torah in Parshas Kisavo. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu write a phrase that can be taken at least to refer to Lavan? The literal meaning is not Lavan, but the metaphoric meaning can be taken to Lavan. Why is that part of this Yetzias Mitzrayim story? So there really are two issues here. Two issues about Lavan. Why is Lavan? Remember, this is about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why are we talking about Lavan? We didn't talk about Esav. We didn't talk about Ishmael. All of a sudden, Lavan seems like one of these no-name personalities, one of these cryptic personalities in Bereishis. All of a sudden, he becomes the person that launches the Haggadah, Arami Oved Avi. There are two issues. Number one, you take a look at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, and Lavan is chasing Yaakov. And as far as he's concerned, he's about to launch a military assault against Yaakov. And he wants to wipe out Yaakov. That's how Besukim in Vayishlach read it. He has his armed mercenaries with him. He's chasing down Yaakov. He's furious. Hashem comes to him in a dream and halts the entire process. Who does this person want to kill? He wants to kill his own grandchildren. He wants to kill his own daughters. What kind of monster? What kind of psychopath wants to eliminate his own progeny? The answer is, this is a profile about how psychopathic hate can be, and how psychopathic hate can be when it's anti-Semitism. Hatred blinds you, and nothing is more important than expressing your hate, even if you are shooting yourself in the leg and killing your own. And this repeats itself throughout history. Again, it's a double message about hate in general. That's why it's so important to struggle with hate, because hatred can be very self-destructive, because nothing stands in your way, because the hate burns so deep, in the Megillah. Paro was willing to sacrifice his own Bechor, his own firstborn. Paro lost his firstborn, and according to Chazal, he himself was a firstborn, so as far as he's concerned, he was willing to go down with the ship just to kill a few more Jews. How many trains, how many reports were there of train stations with soldiers in Nazi Germany trying to get to each front, to Stalingrad or to Normandy, and the trains were full of Jews being ported to concentration camps? Hitler, Yimach Shemo's hatred for the Jewish people was so psychopathic. Who knows how the war would have ended differently if the soldiers and the personnel and the artillery could have reached the front. This is a profile in how raging and fuming hatred and hatred of the Jews can be, that Lavan, this is the introduction to Yetzias Mitzrayim, because Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just a story. Yetzias Mitzrayim is a paradigm for Jewish history. I'll talk about that word a little bit. Everything that happened in Mitzrayim will happen throughout history. So we're pulling it back. We're flipping it back. We're rolling it back to the pre-Mitzrayim. This is the first incident. You could say this is probably the first incident of Jew hatred. The first, and it's just so purposeless. And he's about to murder his own daughters and his own grandchildren. Forget the daughters, his grandchildren. The second issue you see is that Yaakov was hated by Lavan even before he had a family or a nation. There was no nation. If you start the story of anti-Semitism from Parsha Shmos, there is a nation living in Mitzrayim, embedded in Egypt. And that evokes all sorts of irrational fears in Paro. What's going to happen? Our enemies will attack us. The Egyptians were battling the Hittites. Constant war, constant battle. They're a fifth column. Double loyalty, dual loyalty. They're a mole. They'll suppress us. They'll multiply. They're smarter than us. They're this. Yaakov was just a man and his wife and his children. They don't represent any threat. Who are they going to conquer? What land are they going to take? They don't want to settle in Aram Naharaim. They're just a family. There's something very visceral about anti-Semitism. Without drilling down into the details, where it comes from, where it stems from, in Lavan's case, it probably had a little to do with Yaakov's success. If you read the middle of Vayishlach, you better understand the end of Vayishlach. Yaakov was so wildly successful, even against all odds, even when he separated all the weak and lame and unhealthy animals, spectacular success. But remember, anti-Semitism exists at two levels. It's at human level, social, political, cultural causes. There's a metaphysical level that we're Hashem's people. And Lavan, as every anti-Semite, has a very ambivalent relationship with Yaakov, because he wants Yaakov, because Yaakov is the source of his prosperity. There's always this very ambivalent relationship with Jews, because they bring prosperity. We try. That's our goal in life, is to change our world and to improve our world. But sometimes it incites jealousy and hatred. So I think we're a little bit past our time. Where are we here? Where do we stand here? A little bit past our time limit. So maybe we'll talk. No, just... maybe I'll just mention it quickly. We have a few minutes. The more literal version of Arami Oved Avi is not that Lavan wanted to destroy Yaakov. That's how the Haggadah frames it. That's presumably how Kisavo takes it. But if you just take that phrase out of Kisavo, as the Rashbam interprets in Kisavo, Aram Yovanov, it means Yaakov was wandering. Why is it important for us to know that Yaakov was wandering? Why does Hashem write a phrase that can mean two different things in Kisavo? And the answer is because you ask yourself, why was Yaakov wandering? Yaakov was wandering because he had to flee from Esav. Yaakov didn't choose to be in Aram Naharaim for 20 years. He fled his brother Esav, who had murderous intent. And because of that, he paid a very high price. When he came back to Eretz Yisrael, he had to resettle the land. And you're seeing a profile of Yaakov that settling the land of Israel will not be as easy as our Avos thought. Remember, Avraham had struggles to settle the land of Israel, but he never had to leave Israel proper. He could stay. And even when he has to find a bride for his son, he dispatches an agent. So he stays in Israel. It's not all smooth, but he stays in Israel. Yitzhak pretty much has a very straight, comfortable experience. There are no wars in Israel. There are no visitations. There's no supernatural apparitions. He has some squabbles about water, but in the end, it all works out. And he settles in a place called Rehovot, not modern-day Rehovot, Kirchev Hashem Lano. Yaakov has to flee from Israel because he has received the Bechora and the Bracha, because he's been selected. And that starts this paradigm where, unfortunately, we will not have as easy time settling in Israel and fulfilling our title as the Bechor as you would have thought. So when we start Jewish history, and this is an assessment of Jewish history, we start by reminding ourselves that Yaakov was a wandering Armenian. He spent time in Armenia, spent time in Aram Naharaim. He was wandering. He had to flee Esav. It came at a steep price. He couldn't settle Israel. And now he's coming back to Israel. And even when he comes back, again, he lives there for a while. I'm not going to give you the timelines, but at least in Parsha times, in Torah times, it seems very brief, because he returns in Vayishlach, and by Vayeshev, already the wheels are turning back to Egypt. Again, he stays many, many, many years in Israel. But remember, as we saw in the Megillah, there is real time, and then there is literary time. In the Megillah, how many years elapsed between Perek Aleph and Perek Beis? Remember, we talked about this? 4 years. Between Perek Beis and Perek Gimel, another 5 years. We read them very quickly, so literarily it feels quick. On the calendar, it takes a lot of time. Same thing with Yaakov. He spends a lot of time in Israel, but it feels like he wanders from Lavan down to Mitzrayim, or at least the process to Mitzrayim starts as quickly as he arrives. He said, we're going to go through a mitzvah Shem, as many of these words, each word, each phrase, because I'll take, and this is the story, and it's important to learn the story, not just the introduction, okay? Welcome to our guests. Enjoy your visit here. Have a great day, everyone. Welcome.